As the budget process begins to move on Capitol Hill, the Republican majority generally has little appetite for any new taxes, and it has been slow to embrace the need to address global warming. But low gasoline prices have recently sparked a bipartisan conversation about raising the gas tax to help pay for road maintenance and slow CO2 emissions. Republican proponents include Senate Finance Committee Chair Orrin Hatch, who has gone on record saying a higher gas tax is, quote, a small price to pay for the finest highway system in the world. Joining us now is Bob Inglis, a former Republican congressman from South Carolina, to tell us why conservatives should support a gas tax. Welcome to Living on Earth, Congressman.
Great to be with you. Thank you very much.
With gas prices as low as they've been in years, I mean, some places are down to, what, $2 a gallon, folks in Washington on both sides of the aisle have started to talk about having a gas tax. How popular is this among Republicans?
Well, with people like Charles Krauthammer writing about it, I think it could become more popular. Right now, probably at the pump, it's not going to be happily received. People are very much enjoying the low prices. But I hope that people can be as thoughtful as Charles Krauthammer in realizing that there's some long-term consequences that we could avoid if we just had all the cost in on gasoline rather than some hidden cost that aren't revealed at the pump.
What do you mean by hidden costs?
Well, you know, Milton Friedman wrote a book in 1975, the title of which was There's No Such Thing as a Free Lunch. It's a very important concept for conservatives that there's no such thing as a free lunch. You're going to pay the full cost. In the case of gasoline, we're paying for the supply line protection out of the Middle East through some very expensive military hardware. That's not attached to the price at the pump that I pay. The cost of the environmental losses that come from the use of that fuel aren't attached at the pump either. So you put those kind of costs in on gasoline, and you see that it's not the $2 that we're paying right now. That's an artificially low price. If you put all the cost in, it's a lot higher than that. And if we saw that true cost, which we're going to pay anyway, through general taxes for the military, through health costs for the small particulates that come out of our tailpipes, for the climate costs that either we or our children or grandchildren will pay, we're going to pay all right. It's just we're not paying as we go. If you pay as you go and you're accountable, then the free enterprise system can show you alternatives.
How much more do you think gas would cost if we put in the true cost accounting? I know you're not an economist, but some folks say it might be $8 or even $10 a gallon.
It's hard to know, isn't it? But anything that we do that gets closer to that actual price does put the incentive in the marketplace. And so all kinds of new technologies become economically viable. The reason that the incumbent fuels continue in their incumbency is that the challenger fuels look more expensive. If you reveal those hidden costs to the incumbent fuels, then the challenger fuels don't need the subsidy props that they currently appear to need. And actually, you can level the playing field, making it so there are no subsidies. Once we eliminate the biggest subsidy of them all, which is being able to dump into the trash dump of the sky for free, that's probably the biggest subsidy that exists. And so that kind of accountability is something that we think conservatives will embrace and that they deeply believe.
Some Republicans seem to be rebranding the gasoline tax as a user fee.
It is most certainly a user fee, and it has always been that way. That's the whole concept, which is why it makes sense from a conservative perspective, because you're paying for what you take. And the more you use the roads, the more you pay, because the more gasoline you're putting in your car. But if you make people pay for what they take sparingly, and they're careful in the use of that resource. And so it makes sense as a user fee.
So let's go ahead from the concept of the user fee and look at your calls for a carbon tax. Now, if I understand your thinking, when people burn carbon, they're using the atmosphere. So to what extent would it make sense to have a fee to use the atmosphere that, well, might otherwise be known as a carbon tax?
Yeah, this is precisely what we think makes the most sense, and actually what nearly the unanimous view of the economics profession is that it would make sense, whether those are liberal economists or very conservative economists, to attach all the cost to all the fuels and eliminate the subsidies. If you're a conservative, you want to do that. So in the case of a carbon tax, you really have this very virtuous situation where people then are paying for what they put into the air, and it's no longer free dumping. Of course, it's crucial for us as conservatives that that carbon tax be revenue neutral, meaning there'd be a tax cut somewhere else, dollar for dollar, so that there is no growth of government.
Congressman, before you go, some folks doing the math of the new Congress look and see that some 70% of Republicans elected don't see a scientific base to say that there's a problem with the climate. What's your view of those numbers, and what do you think it means going forward in terms of America addressing the threat of climate disruption?
I think those numbers are changing, and they're going to change rapidly. In the Great Recession, it became necessary as a conservative to repeat the lines that climate change was hooey. It was one thing we didn't need to worry about, and that orthodoxy became very important in the Great Recession. Now, you're able to say, well, I'm not a scientist, so I'm not real sure. The next step in the journey of faith is to saying, well, of course it's real, and of course we should pay attention to the scientist. And you know what? There's some exciting ways to fix this that are completely consistent with conservative thought.
How possible do you think it would be for a Republican to get nominated by your party for the presidency if he or she says that climate change is real? And then how possible would it be for a Republican nominee to win the general election if that candidate does not say that climate change is real?
Yeah, what interesting questions. As to the first question, I think there's an incredible breakthrough opportunity for a candidate that wants to lead the Grand Opportunity Party and leave behind the grumpy old party if they embrace the science of climate and say, you know what, free enterprise has an answer to this. And so the question is, who'll be bold enough to break out of the pack? The pack in the last two cycles has clearly been, oh, it's a bunch of hooey, we don't need to worry about it. If my party plans on having a presidential candidate who disputes the science of climate change, we're not going to fare very well with young people and independents. The polling data would indicate that those folks are concerned about climate change, and they're looking for people with answers. And that style of disputing the science is going to be way out of style come 2016.
Bob Inglis is a former Republican congressman from South Carolina. He's now executive director of the Energy and Enterprise Initiative. Thanks so much for taking the time today, Congressman.
Great to be with you.